The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Consider yourself a home dreamer? One who watches the renovation programs on television? Are you just waiting for the right time to build or renovate your dream home? Welcome to Winning the Dream Home Race with Steve Clipp Architect. Steve has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. He has insights into the psychology of space that could strengthen your marriage and soothe your soul. He has an understanding of market forces and the methodologies of construction that could save you thousands of dollars, and he could make you a winner. Now, here's Steve Clipp.
Hi, people. Welcome back. I just read a report that there's been no growth in the last few years in the suburbs. So the suburbs have stayed flat in their population. But there has been market growth, at least a few percentage points, in the established city neighborhoods and also in small town neighborhoods. Why is this? Part of it's nostalgia, you know, nostalgia for the place we grew up in, or looking at Leave It to Beaver, the place we wanted to grow up. And part of this is for a true neighborhood feel. An established neighborhood has a history to it. You feel you know people there, and you feel you're in touch with those around you. One of the reasons is simply you're closer together than you are out in the suburban half-acre to acre lots. Also, the trees are grown. You know, the trees are now 60 years old and they're beautiful. And the landscape is mature. It doesn't have that raw feeling that we have in the suburbs. And you're close to everything. Often you can actually walk to a store, not drive. The downtown is closer, and cultural events are closer. So life is easier in that you can get to more things without getting in your car or driving far. On top of that is a desire to downsize and to simplify life. And we think of these older neighborhoods as being a simpler time, easier time. So even conceptually, we're drawn to them. They're growing. What are the characteristics of an established neighborhood? Well, there were actually, when you look at our cities around the country, there were two bursts of growth. There was a burst of growth from 1910 to 1928. And a whole lot of the housing stock, a whole lot of the neighborhoods were developed then. And there was a burst of growth from 1946 to 1966, the post-World War II, you know, baby boom and just simply economic boom that occurred after World War II. However, compared to today, the houses were much smaller. Typically, a house was 3 bedrooms, 1 and maybe 2 baths, but usually 1 bath, and it was 1,400 square feet. The houses were 1 or 2 story. They were easy to build houses. Back in the 1910, 1920 era, the most common design was a 4 square. Then in the 1950s, you saw the Cape Cods become the dominant design. And then later in the 60s, the split levels came along. And but we won't touch on the split levels. They have their own special issues to overcome. So a lot of these were the new neighborhoods that were developed then were starter homes for young families, and they were also worker houses for blue-collar workers who now discovered themselves kind of moving up. Even, you know, they were being paid better. They actually were moving into the middle class, which was another reason that a lot of these neighborhoods are relatively small houses and people who've been there, have lived there for 40 years. Before World War II, before air conditioning, and especially in the South, typically these houses had 10-foot ceilings so that the hot air would rise, you know, and you went down where it was cooler. After World War II, the 8-foot ceilings became the standard. And, you know, and then the other characteristic that you often saw in these, almost always saw in these neighborhoods, is small yards. The 1910-1928 era, you saw yards that were very small, usually 50 feet wide lots. And this is what I grew on, is a 50 foot wide lot and a lot of decent houses very close together. Even after World War II, you saw quarter acre or eighth acre lots. These made for close neighborhoods and neighbors that were close to you and that you really, because they were close, you got to know. And you also played outside. It's part of the nostalgia. They also today have great trees. Perhaps once a month, maybe more, I'll talk to someone about renovating one of these older homes. And today I'm going to tell the tale of a specific project that I just looked at for a couple. This is in the small town of Hillsboro, North Carolina. And I told you the other nostalgic area are the in-town neighborhoods of small towns. Same reasons for the established neighborhoods in the cities. But Hillsboro, North Carolina is a great town. It existed before the Revolutionary War. And in fact, as part of the revolutionary foment and the regulator movement started in Hillsboro, North Carolina. After that, it became the county seat and also had a textile mill and some other textile or related businesses. So it had a quiet existence for about 200 years. And now it's been discovered. Hillsboro is this beautiful small town, and it's right on I-40. You can hop right on I-40 and get to Duke University, hop right on I-40 and get to the Research Triangle Park. So for people looking for that small town feel and easy access, this is a great town. Luckily, a couple decades ago, Hillsboro established a historic district. And so the whole downtown of Hillsboro, which has a lot of pre-Revolutionary War homes, is now protected. And there is a historic district commission that controls all of the growth in there and all of the construction, which means it's further protected, and when people are looking for these kind of nostalgic neighborhood areas, the idea that it's protected from growth and you won't have a McDonald's going on the corner, you won't have a, you know, a CVS pharmacy or something pop up, that's really important. It's really important to property values because the property values in these hot locations are much higher than they are elsewhere. And because of this there's an ambiance there. There's 1850s cottages, which I'm renovating an 1850s cottage there right now. There's 1910 worker houses, and I'm renovating one of those, or I'm the architect to renovate them. And there's a lot of just beautiful small house stock, and it's all selling right now for stiff premiums. Okay. Now, in this case, here we have, you know, this is a tale of a specific house where I just met with the owners. In this case, it was a cute one-story cottage with a wide front porch and space under, you know, and then four-square cottage with space under the roof for a couple more bedrooms. The couple had already bought the house before I met them. In fact, they had bought it a couple years ago and are renting it. And now they called me in because they want to make it their home. Often I'll meet with a couple before they buy a house. And one of the things I do is I go along with them to look at a house that they're interested in and, you know, help them understand the consequences. What are the potentials of the house and what are the pitfalls? And also, and really important, an idea of the renovation cost. This cottage was built sometime in the 1920s. I don't know when. And it's a typical four-square plan, meaning there's a center hall that runs from the front door to the back door with a room on either side in the front and an identical room on either side in the back. It's 36 feet wide, 32 feet deep, basically a square. And one of the reasons... Well, it's basically a square. And then plus on the back, there are an 8-foot wide shed roof extensions that are on both sides and back, with in between them a back porch between the two shed extensions. Just interestingly, I wondered whether this at one time had been a two-family house because of the back porch in the middle and the way it was set up, plus also whether it had been two families or two generations of family. So old houses often go through a few different changes in how they're used over the years. And in this case also, each one of the rooms had a little brick fireplace. And they were tiny, tiny fireplaces set up to burn coal, not wood, and back-to-back in between the front room and the back room. So I doubt this house, when it was built, had central heating. In fact, I'm sure it didn't. And with little tiny closets that filled the space on either side of these central chimneys. And, of course, as I said, this was in the south before air conditioning, so there were 10-foot ceilings. Then, at some point in the past, the center hall, which in the southern house always runs from the front door to the back door to encourage a breeze through the house, it's actually called the Venturi effect, that actually creates a suction and increases the airflow through the house. Well, at some point in the past, that center hall, and the back of it, was filled in with an awkward bathroom, one for the whole house, and kind of shut down the whole gracious feel of the center hall. When I come back from break, we'll get into this cottage, but the, you know, I'll get into the tale of what I'm going to do with it. And I'm doing this because the four square plan seems like at least half of the pre-World War II houses that I look at, or more, are this four-square plan. And, you know, so that's what we'll talk about after we come back from the break.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com. When you look at something that's been designed, whether it's clothing, architecture, or a work of art, do you stop and wonder about the inspiration and thought process that went into the design? Tune in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader-Schappa. We'll take the mystery out of the creation process, along with revealing the backstory from art to fashion to travel and so much more. Listen to Dishing the Dirt on Design every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We are in the midst of a global sovereign debt crisis that could lead to the ultimate risk for the world economy, the removal of the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. What will this event really mean to the markets? And more importantly, what does it mean for you and your family? Listen to Global Currency Watch with your host, Stephen Ayer, to get a full and objective look at the world's sovereign debt crisis and help you prepare for when the crisis envelops the United States. Global Currency Watch airs live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Business. Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipark@yahoo.com. That's C-L-I-P-P-A-R-C-H at yahoo.com. Now, back to winning the dream home race.
Okay, now let's dig into this specific house. My process, this is a tale of how I would meet with the owners and give them an idea of how to, you know, what they can do with this house and how much it will cost. My process begins with a consult. It takes about an hour and a half, and I'll arrange to meet with the owners and to walk through the house. We'll first look at the outside of the house and then go through all of the rooms, you know, at the same, and go through all the rooms. And at the same time, I'm asking them about their goals and ambitions for their home, trying to understand what their thinking is. First of all, what their goals are and what ideas they already have in their head as to where they see the house going. So let's pretend that we're on that consult and I'm giving you my thoughts on your cottage. How to revive it for today's lifestyle and what it will cost. Let's start at the front porch. It's a beautiful front porch. It's 7 feet wide and 36 feet long. Looks out over the lawn and the street. It is great. It's a great front porch. And it's probably the first reason why you are buying this house. There's nothing to change out there except to paint and repair. Great. So now we step through the front door. The front door is the most noticed feature of a home. And what I'm trying to do is relate to you right as we go, as we stroll through the house, you know, the conclusions that I would come up with. And if we were actually going through the house, I'd be quiet for a good half hour, 45 minutes, as I'm trying to get really soak in the feel of the house and see what's unique about it and what the possibilities are. Okay, we're at the front door, and it is the most noticed item on the home. So in this case, we're going to upgrade it. You know, I would recommend that we upgrade it to a beautiful real wood, prairie style unit, meaning It's just thick and solid with side lights. And on the cottage, I'd probably put in inserts of stained glass or leaded glass. In other words, a really impressive door with side lights is a statement. And in this case, that statement will probably cost $5,000. So we're starting a running total of cost, and right at the front door, let's spend $5,000 and make it impressive. Now we're in the foyer. And, okay, now we step into the foyer. And typically, on a four-square house, there would be a view straight through to the back door. And it's that view where you step in, you go through the foyer, through the center hall, and then release out glass at the back. That's what gives it its graciousness. Now, unfortunately, as I said, somebody stuck a bathroom in there and filled up the back of the hall. So now it's very closed in. There's a dining room to your left and a living room to your right, but there's only a single solid door going into each of these rooms. As I told you, this house was originally heated with coal fireplaces. So each room had to be closed off to conserve the heat, you know, and to hold it into the room. What it means is that this foyer is really shut down. So the answer is to open everything up, to put a wide opening between the foyer and the dining room, probably 9 feet wide, and maybe with a pair of slender columns that just decorate things and add style. On the other side, to the living room, change that single door into double glass French doors. And you need to keep doors on this room because in your newly recreated cottage, this is the adult quiet room. That study becomes the adult quiet room or reading room where you can shut out the noise. Or conversely, it could be the music room where your piano practice doesn't disturb the whole house. But it's really valuable to preserve a door, to open it up with glass French doors, and at the same time to preserve the ability to create privacy and acoustical blockage. Otherwise, the dining room is perfect as is, and so is the study. In fact, they've got a lot of really nice character from the 1920s. Now, opening them up to the foyer, refinishing and painting, simple stuff, $10,000. So our running total so far now is $15,000. Behind the dining room is an almost identical square room, and behind that is the shed roofed addition extension that was the galley kitchen. Now, this is where we get radical. That square room behind the dining room is only 13 feet by 13 feet. If I take out the bathroom that somebody stuck in the center hall, and I take out the wall between the square room and the center hall, I now have a space that is 18 feet wide before you get to the staircase. That's still in the hallway. So I've now opened that up to 18 feet. And if I remove the wall between the square room and the shed roof kitchen on the back. That room is now 18 feet wide and 22 feet deep. This will be the kitchen sitting room, the kitchen sitting room combination that is at the heart of the house. I've done a whole show on, you know, the kitchen family room combination and how this brings people together and becomes the heart of the house. Well, in this case, 18 feet by 22 feet is still cozy rather than big for the function. And it works more. This is a cottage for two people. That's a beautiful, cozy sitting room kitchen for two people. And we'll use a lot of tricks to gain volume. When you look at this house, there is a upstairs over the middle of the house, but there's nothing over the back 12 feet. So what we'll do is we'll rip the roof off the back of the house and raise it up. Now, at this point, one of the things I encourage people to do are I use visual aids. There should be a link on the Voice America site to my website, StephenClippArchitecture.com. If you go to my website, StephenClippArchitecture.com, then go to the portfolio page. You'll see the word portfolio. Click on that. On the portfolio page, the last one on the right side is the Whitmore House. Go ahead and click on that name. The Whitmore House is similar. It's actually right around the corner from the house I'm talking about in the historic district of Hillsborough. It was a mid-century modern, kind of very base level house and recreated in the same, in a similar way. If you pull up, click on the second picture in there, you can see a very similar solution to the one I'm talking about. And so what we did is we ripped the roof off the back of the house and we raised it up to a cathedral ceiling that runs perpendicular to the roof of the main house. At the side walls of this room, you have 10-foot side walls, and it rises up, the ceiling rises up to 16 feet in the middle. Right under that high point, and if you're looking at the picture from the Whitmore House, you can see the same thing. Right under that high point, you put in the fireplace. A big fireplace with a raised hearth and a mantle. That's the visual focal point of the room. And just like in the Whitmore House, when you're looking at that, well, similar to that, to the right of the fireplace, we'd put in double French doors, and to the left of the fireplace, double windows. What an effect this makes. Think about it. Imagine that you're in the center hall at the front door of the house. Now you can look straight back through a new case doorway into this kitchen sitting room and straight through there to the French doors that open up on the back porch. We've reestablished the flow and feeling of the historic traditional foursquare with the center hall that runs from the front to the back. Then, now, step through that cased doorway into the kitchen sitting room. Wow. you see that room just open up. Your eye is drawn to the fire. Your eye is drawn directly to the fireplace, and then it rises up to the 16-foot peak. The contrast between that small flat room, flat-ceiling rooms that you just passed through, and this space makes it appear even bigger and more dramatic. And we'll just keep on for a few minutes. The kitchen, so still looking at the same space, the kitchen is an L-shaped that backs up to the dining room so that when you step into it, you see the sitting area, you see the drama of the sitting area, and the kitchen is kind of almost behind you and to the side. We can fit in this L-shaped kitchen and a big island. The island that I see in there is probably 3.5 feet wide by 8 foot long. That's big. Plenty of room for a sink facing the fireplace so you can keep in the conversation with the people in the sitting area and stools for casual dining. The closet that I told you about beside the fireplaces, the old fireplace in the middle, that becomes a really neat butler's pantry and a way to get from the kitchen to the dining room. So, okay, let's add up cost. To rip off the back of the roof, raise the ceiling up with a new roof, put in a new fireplace, and all of those windows to open it up, is $40,000. But wow, does it have an impact. $40,000. The kitchen, if you think of, I tell people when you look at kitchen, there's an allowance or budget for cabinets, countertops, and appliances. In this case, if you put in a $25,000 allowance for cabinets, countertops, and appliances, then the kitchen is also $40,000. So now we've gotten through the kitchen sitting room, and our running total for the house is $95,000. When we come back from break, we'll get to the master bedroom.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Step up to the microphone. View the finalists right now on VoiceAmericaKids.tv. America's next great star is waiting to be discovered. Step Up to the Microphone is an exclusive presentation for VoiceAmerica.tv, where you can see and hear America's next top child star. The program is hosted by Voice America's own Cassie Frazier, and new episodes will be available every week exclusively at VoiceAmericaKids.tv. You can say you saw them at the beginning of their superstar career. Tune in to VoiceAmericaKids.tv.
Are you a homeowner who's trying to save on energy bills and go green at the same time? Tune into Energy Saving in the Home, brought to you by 521 Compressor Saver and Home Energy Consultants, with hosts Gary Parr and Dennis Seltzer. They have saved homeowners just like you as much as 65% on energy bills through energy efficiency practices. You'll learn about conservation, products, and services to reduce energy consumption and save you money. Be sure to listen to Energy Saving in the Home, live every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipark@yahoo.com. That's C-L-I-P-P-A-R-C-H at yahoo.com. Now back to winning the dream home race.
Now let's go to the master bedroom. On the other side of the house, behind the study, is again an identical square room with the fireplace. Backing up to the study, it's got a fireplace backing up to the study fireplace with either side of that closets filling in the space. One of those closets acts as a passageway between the study and this back room. And we want to preserve that as one of the two ways to get into the master bedroom. As a master bedroom, this square room is perfect. And including the character of that fireplace, it really is nice, and the 10-foot ceiling. All we have to do is to move. There's one window on the outside wall, right in the center of the wall. All we have to do is move that window to one side so that we have a clear run of wall to place the bed, at least a queen bed or a king, and two nightstands. Conversely, we could also take out that one window and put in two windows as long as they're lined up right behind the nightstands. That's given the space. That's what we'd have to do. Other than that, the room is perfect. The door that used to go to the bathroom that was in the center hall area now goes to the kitchen sitting room. And we've created, underneath the run of the stairs, we've created a little foyer. Because you always want between a public area, the kitchen sitting room, and a private area, the master bedroom, having them close together and in contact with each other is great. But you always want to have a little space, a foyer, that separates the public from the private. So we've got that. Beautiful. This room is just about perfect for a master bedroom, and it needs almost no work to be done. It's nice, whenever you do renovation, it's nice to find spaces that you don't have to spend money on. And this is one. Behind this room, what is another one of those shed roof extensions. In this case, it was a huge mudroom. If this house was ever used as a two-family house, I actually think this was a kitchen to match the kitchen in the shed roof extension on the other side. But now it's a huge mudroom, mostly wasted. Most of this will become the master bath. You put in a window to the side, put in the skylight above, and put a French door out to the back porch. And this master bedroom is flooded with light. Yep. If you're still looking at, or if you're on my website looking at the Whitmore house, one of the last pictures, I believe, shows the master bath in there. This is very similar. And there's also a plan of the Whitmore house at the end. It's a similar bath. Not huge, but really quite comfortable with an 8-foot-long vanity with two sinks. And one thing that I really like to do is to take the toilet and the shower, put them off in their own compartment so that the main part becomes more of a dressing area, nicer, more genteel. Toilet and shower off in their own compartment to the side. Especially if you can put in a skylight to flood the shower with light. And in this case, I actually propose that they make the side wall of the shower glass block. And there's a way that I can do it. Not only can that be glass block, but the shower can be doorless. So, really neat, beautiful shower. and there's a little bit of space left to create a small laundry room, mudroom as well. Because, of course, you need a laundry room and a mudroom. Okay, including, now let's add up the dollars again. Including the small powder room tucked underneath the stairs, this master bedroom bath should cost $40,000. As I said, we spent almost nothing on the master bedroom. Master bath, they always cost money. So figure $40,000. That means our running total, our running cost total is now $135,000. Now let's look at other bedrooms. The roof of the house runs parallel with the front of the house, which means, and it's just a single straightforward roof with a gable end on either side, and of course with windows in those gable ends. Already, there are two bedrooms tucked underneath that gable end roof. Actually, again, very similar to the Whitmore house for the upstairs. This is in the historic district. And one thing that is pretty clear is you can't alter the roof line of a house in the historic district. But what we can do is we can add a dormer to the backside of the roof and put a nice bath in that. We can add a dormer because primarily it's not seen. So the historic commission is fine with it. Adding that bath makes the cottage now into a three-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath house. Cost of adding the cottage, $20,000. And the cost of adding the dormer and upstairs bathroom is $20,000. And now our running total is $155,000. This is the South. This is, well, anywhere in the country. A screen porch is really nice. I did a whole show on screen porches. And one of the things I emphasized is don't make it too small. A good size for a screen porch is 14 foot wide by 24 feet long. This allows you room for a sitting area and a dining area. So let's go for it. 14 foot wide, 24 feet long, with a gable end looking out to the back. So you step out onto the porch and it just opens up. And we, you know, in this case, adding the nice big porch costs almost the same thing as adding a small one. So there's no value in scrimping on the size. The cost, $25,000. Our running total on the house is now $180,000. And when I get back from the break, I'll wrap it up and we'll look at our total cost and decide whether, yes, this is the house I want. Yes, I want to go for it. And what the implications of that are when we come back from break.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk. Yeah! If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Voice America Network proudly presents The Catherine Zock Show for women, men, children, and families. Catherine magically combines her compassion, experience, and talent to bring listeners a show that's upbeat, informative, and yes, a little sassy. Tune in every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern, to The Catherine Zock Show on the Voice America channel.
When you talk about the subject of bullying, It's not just the person being bullied who is dealing with complicated issues. It's also parents and teachers. Bullying has even taken a new turn with social networking, negative images, and even reality TV. Tune in to One Word Nation Radio with host Jessica Brookshire. We'll put the issue of bullying front and center, going beyond the classrooms and hallways of our schools to help empower and protect youth and their families. Listen every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipark@yahoo.com. That's C-L-I-P-P-A-R-C-H at yahoo.com. Now, back to Winning the Dream Home Race.
Okay, our consult on fixing up your dream cottage is just about complete. So far, we've outlined $180,000 worth of expenditures, and all that remains now is fixing up the outside. In this case, at some point in the past, and you'll see on nearly every old house, vinyl siding was really popular back in the 1960s. And lots of high-pressure salesmen went around and convinced everyone to, instead of repainting, to sheathe their house in vinyl siding. This is what's interesting here, or what you'd like to do, is to strip off the vinyl siding that now covers the house and restore the original wood. Put on a good coat of paint. And that's probably the best answer. In fact, because we're in the historic district, there are really only two answers. Strangely enough, they allow you to keep the vinyl siding because that's what exists. And you can replace it with new vinyl siding. Or you can strip it off and you can, you know, go with the original wood, depending upon how, what shape it's in. You can replace it with new wood siding to match what originally was on the house. It's an adventure. You don't know till you strip off the vinyl what condition the wood underneath is in. Quite often, though, I find the wood underneath is in very good shape, that it was covered with vinyl because there was a high-pressure salesman in the area, and you admit you didn't have to paint it. So that's in the historic district. If we were in the historic district, and what I've done on many houses is I've stripped off the vinyl, stripped off the wood, and replaced it with fiber cement board, like a hardy board siding. Fiber cement board is a terrific material. It is, you know, it's next to brick, the most long-lasting, maintenance-free siding you can put on a house. It holds paint much better than wood does. In fact, there's a reasonable expectation with a good paint job, you'll get 10 to 15 years before you have to repaint the house. That costs about the same money as the wood siding. In fact, in this case, it would probably cost less to strip everything off and redo it with hardy board rather than trying to fix the wood. However, we're in the historic district. It's not allowed. So, as we're looking at the house and our running totals, to repair the outside of the house, $20,000. That makes the grand total. So now the grand total for taking this worker's cottage on a great lot in a really nice neighborhood and converting it into a beautiful, warm, cozy, upscale dream cottage. The cost is $200,000. And fairly consistently, that's what I find. When you add up all the pieces, and this is how you do renovation addition, is you describe a piece, such as a new kitchen, such as a new master bath, such as a screen porch. You describe each one of those pieces and put a cost by them, and then you add them up. And if you're doing everything on what will be a 2,000 square foot cottage, it comes to around $200,000. I've seen $250,000. Now you take a step back, and this is the point in the consult where I urge the owners or potential owners to take a step back, look at what they're paying for the house as is, or look at what the value of the house is as is. In this case, they already own it. Plus add $200,000. This is the cost of your beautiful dream cottage. In this case, just as a guess, the underlying value of the house is $200,000 plus $200,000 to upgrade it. So we're at $400,000. The first question is, what can I buy for $400,000? Take a look at the market, and I'm not saying it exists, but it's possible there's another cottage where this has already been done. And what is it on the market for? How does that compare to the $400,000 that you would spend here? So first look at the other things you can buy in the market for the same cost. And frankly, if you can buy a better deal, maybe that's the best move. The advantage of doing this cottage is it's yours, it's special, and you did it. And sometimes that means a lot more to people. Also, look at, okay, I described $400,000, $200,000 for the underlying property, $200,000 for the upfit work. What is the resale value? I believe, I'm Scottish, I believe that you shouldn't do anything where you lose money. So you look at it, $400,000. If tomorrow I decided to move or something happened, could I turn around and sell the house for $400,000? Well, I look at the comparables in the area, and in this case, I look at the comparables in the area, and I say, sure. In fact, this is a hot neighborhood. Property values are in good shape right now, and I expect them to get in better shape as the overall market becomes better. So, yes, it's worth the, you know, yes, if I had to sell the house tomorrow, I could turn around and sell it for the $400,000 that I've got in it. And in fact, including the cost of sales, you're really looking at more like $440,000. So, you know, to absolutely break even and lose nothing on the deal. And you look at the time, you know, you look at the wear and tear on you, the psychological cost of doing a project like this. Or, as I say, the psychological joy of doing it. for many people, this is an incredible adventure. This is one of, I've seen it revive marriages. I've seen it hurt marriages, but I've seen it revive marriages. I've seen it spark up people's lives. And in fact, it's so much fun that they have a hard time stopping. And when it's all over, your house is finished, it's perfect, and you move in, I've actually seen a letdown because there was so much energy and so much fun in doing the house. So this is one perfect cottage. It's very similar if you look at the Whitmore house on my, you know, on my website. Very similar to that. That will give you an idea of it. This is an idea of the cost breakdown. And good luck. It's your decision as the owner what you want to do. I'm just a consultant, you know, giving you your options, letting you know what's possible. Thank you, and I will, you know, thank you, and I don't know what I'm talking about next week, but I'm sure I'll come up with something interesting. Please send me an email and let me know what you're thinking about.
Thanks again for listening to Winning the Dream Home Race. Please join your host, Steve Klipp, again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll help you come one step closer to building or renovating your dream home.